Okay, so in this video, I want to do several things as we wrap up our application before we try to submit it into into the store for inclusion so that people can download our application and use it on their phone. As you'll see off camera, I organized my code and I wrote some code comments, and there was a number of things that I did in the process of organizing the code. For example, if on the main page.xaml you scroll down, you'll see that there are these region areas, kind of this box around this gray text. If I hover my mouse cursor over it, you can see that there's code inside of it. You can see that also the line numbers jump from 53 to 90. So what's going on with that? Well, a region is simply an artificial code block, I guess you could say. It's something that you can use to roll up one or more lines of code and give it a name and kind of keep it tucked away by using a little plus minus icon in the one of the left columns. And the purpose of this is simple. It's just to help organize your code and remove the clutter and to again, like I did here, give a friendly name to one or more, in this case, methods that are somewhat related. They kind of belong together and keep them kind of congregated together and out of my way so that I'm not constantly running up against them as I'm reviewing my code. So there's a couple of things that I've done here. You can see I took all the app bar icon click events and I put them all within a region called app bar icon click events. And inside of the pound region, and then I gave it a name, and then a pound end region, I have the app bar help click event and the app bar add click event. Okay, so just another way of organizing my code. And you can see I've done that several times for helper methods and for the help canvas, that help screen that pops up. If you scroll up to the very top, you'll see another thing that I do when I organize my code. Typically, I like to keep the constructor at the very top, and then below that, the loaded event for the XAML page. And what is a constructor? Well, without getting into object-oriented programming, which I've tried to avoid up to this point, constructor is a method that gets executed every time a new instance of your class has been instantiated. So in this case, main page shares the same name as the class. Main page, therefore, is the constructor for the class. And again, just I don't want to really get too deep into this, but it allows you to execute code as soon as a new instance of the code is created to in this case, initialize some values that are in the code. Now, if we were to open up this initialize component method, if you go to the definition, right-click it and go to definition, you'll see that we're kind of deep in the bowels of some code that we normally wouldn't see in our Solution Explorer. But here it's creating instances of several of our controls, like the canvas control, the close, the scroll viewer, and so on. But again, I don't think we should touch this code. Makes me a little scared to be in here in the first place, so I'm just going to close that down. But again, this is an area where we would do some initialization work. Here, the loaded event, and then below that, any click events that are used. You can see that I have the click event for the note location button, also the app bar click events, and then any helper methods I try to put at the very bottom, but keep them collected together. So I did something similar to that for all the pages. The add.xaml.cs page has a similar. Last time I looked at it, I had these all unraveled, so they may not be closed up just nicely. And then the viewedit.xaml has a similar kind of structure as well as you look through it. And you can see I have a number of regions I've defined for these as well. Okay, so then the next thing after I kind of feel good about the organization of my code and I've cleaned up some things, wrote some code comments to remind myself of what I'm trying to accomplish, I want to start combing through the code and adding exception handling around some key parts of my application. Anything that's going to use an external resource, like the flash drive inside the phone, for example, or whenever we're dealing with those APIs that have to do with the GPS functionality of the phone, makes me a little uncomfortable to use some of those features. So I want to bolster the possibility that we'll handle gracefully a problem that might occur when some external resource like that that I have no control over as a developer, because, for example, the flash drive might be completely full, or it might have been corrupted somehow, or there may not be access to the internet at this moment. So we don't want the whole application to just blow up in those cases. We would want it to degrade gracefully. a lot of time needs to be spent thinking about how to make that work. I'm going to just take a blanket approach and just ignore any problems that occur. In the future, I'll come back and I'll try to be a little bit more thoughtful about how to handle specific errors. The way that I'm going to handle potential errors, though, and let me find a spot where I'm actually doing some work. Let's see. For example, here where I'm actually saving changes, what I want to do is wrap that with what's called a try catch block. So I'm going to go try open close block, catch open close block, and then I'm going to take all the code in this using statement and I'm going to paste it in there. Okay, so then in the catch area here, I'm just going to just write ignore for now. Again, maybe I'll come back at another date and give more thought to what I can do. I can log this error to another file on the file system, unless the file system's corrupt. That may not be such a good idea. I may be able to send a message to a web service that I create to collect all errors that my users are encountering, but what if they can't connect to the network? So I have to give a little bit more thought. At the very least, I probably want to notify the user, but that might involve the creation of additional canvases for dialog boxes, and I don't want to get into that at the moment. But probably something I should give more thought to here in the future. For now, I'm going to throw caution to the wind and just move on. So do as I say, not as I do in this case, okay? I'm going to comb through my code now. I'm going to let you go ahead and watch me. I'm not going to say much as I look for every place where I am, first of all, touching the file system. One more thing, let me just say this. Let me explain how the try catch works in a very generic sort of way. If there's any exception that gets thrown inside of this code, what'll happen is it'll immediately bolt out of this code and go down to this code block called the catch. Now, ideally, what we would do is this, or some variation on that, that would allow me then to look at the message, the error message, or a and the exception, an ID or a number of some sort, and then respond appropriately. In this case, again, I'm just going to ignore for now. But that's how the catch works. Without this exception EX here, it'll just go to the code block and we'll have no way to get at the exception object that was created and then passed to the catch statement. We'll just ignore that as well. You might be wondering why am I leaving some parts of code out, like for example here. Again, things that I can control, I don't really need to wrap a try catch around it. Things I can't control, I may need to wrap a try catch statement around it. Try catch statements are a little more expensive processing wise, so I don't just like to use them willy-nilly and wrap everything in a try catch statement. I try to be a little more judicious in my selection of what gets a try catch statement and what doesn't. All right, so I think I've touched just about every part of my application. Maybe except this. All right, but again, and I will remind you of this video or two from now, and where to go from here. Exception handling, you need to give a lot of thought to this. It's kind of an afterthought in this application, this demo application. I would probably spend a lot of time thinking about this if I was really serious about building a commercial application. Okay, so the other thing that kind of worries me about this application, if I scroll up to the top, is whenever we're using the GPS functionality of the phone, I don't know what the state of the phone is, whether the GPS functionality is broken or not, whether we can get a valid connection out to the internet to send our coordinates to that web service. So this whole area here makes me a little nervous, and I'm going to wrap the whole thing in a try-catch. Now, I might feel a little better if I had a physical device in hand. However, as I'm recording this, I don't have one of the physical phones. I'm recording this before I'm actually touching a physical phone and can actually test it. So I might gain a little confidence if I could actually try some of these features out. So this is why I'm kind of being a little more liberal with my use of try-catch statements here, and not trying to be a little more picky. Okay, but at any rate, let's run the application now. Just make sure we can go through some common scenarios and we didn't break anything whenever we added this code to our app. Okay, so let's go ahead and add a new note. Save it. All right, that seems to work. Let's go ahead and edit the note. That seems to work. Let's go back and look at the note. Let's go back. Let's delete it. All right, so it looks to me like the application is functioning pretty well. Okay, so the next thing that I want to talk about then is the certification requirements for the phone. There's a document that, let's go ahead and stop this. There's a document that you can download. If you go out to the App Hub at create.msdn.com, if you scroll down, you should be able to find a document called Windows Phone 7 Application Certification Requirements. It's a PDF document. You'll need Adobe Acrobat to read it. And if you can't find it here on this homepage because it's gotten pushed down for some reason, you should be able to search in Bing and find it. At any rate, I've already downloaded it. And it'll give you the descriptions of the types of things that have to be in place before you go to the App Hub, create.msdn.com, and actually try to submit your application. So I've, as you can see here, I've already opened up the document to section 4.0, which is the application submission requirements. And there is a long list, but some of these are pretty would be easy for us to actually implement. For example, the Zap package must contain the following. Well, first of all, it can't be more than 400 megabytes. I don't think that's going to be a problem. Our application is going to be small. We don't have any custom graphics or video or anything like that. I don't think that's going to be a problem for us. It'll need a valid Windows Phone application manifest file, the wmappmanifest.xml. So we're going to need to make sure that that looks good, that all the settings are there. The title element in the WM app manifest XML must contain an application title. It can't be empty. The tile title is optional. We'll look at that in just a moment. A valid .NET application manifest file named appmanifest.xml. Okay, I know we have one of those. We've seen it, I think, on day one. The application icon that you want displayed on the phone start experience. The icon is optional for games. Well, that doesn't describe us. The application tile image that you want displayed when the user pins the application to the quick launch area. So what are they talking about there? Well, this is the quick launch area. And so what you can do to get this pinned is to hold down the icon with your mouse cursor or your finger eventually, and then select pin to start, or you can choose uninstall. Let's pin that to start, and now you can see it uses the icon and the zap note, the name of the file inside of our WM app manifest.xml file. So we'll want to modify that. Now it gives you some information about the sizes for those for those two icons that we need. The application icon has to be 62 by 62 in a PNG format. The application tile image has to be 173 by 173. As you continue scrolling down and looking at all of the various requirements for validation and things of that nature, I'm not going to worry about those so much. There is one other section here, the icons that are used for the marketplace. So we're going to need a 99 by 99, a 173 by 173, and a 200 by 200 sized image desktop application icon for Windows Phone Marketplace Catalog. Additionally, in section 4.6, we're going to need an application screenshot that's 480 by 800, and I believe that it should be a direct capture. It cannot be enhanced in any way. Okay, so what I did before I started recording this video was I went off and started creating some of these assets. So it took me a little while because I'm not a very creative person. Again, if you're waiting for just a beautiful design from me, you'll be waiting quite some time. But I've got this Zap Notes 62x62.png, and then I have a version of this file that allows plenty of space underneath it for the Windows Phone to put the name of the application below it. Then I have the 99 by 99 icon. As you can see here, it just, I'm going to double click it. You can see that it's the icon I've been using plus the name, and I used a Helvetica font. I think the other requirement is the icon that you put in the marketplace cannot look dramatically different from the icon that the phone actually uses. So I just stuck with the same icon. And here's the 200 by 200 version. And also what I needed was a screenshot, a 480 by 800 screenshot. And what I did was I simply just went to the emulator, I clicked the plus, and I went to 100% and clicked OK. And then I resized this on my screen. You can't see it in this recording area. And then I opened up in Windows 7, there is an application called the Sniffing Tool, and you can use that to just like capture a big area. And then I pulled it into a graphic editor and measured out 480 by 800, which happened to be pretty much everything right inside of the Chrome of the phone. So let's not change that at the moment. And let me change this back to 50%. Okay, great. Now what I'm going to need to do is get these two icons into my application. So what I want to do is just highlight them both, and I'm going to drag and hover over and then drop them here into my project. And now they should be added. Okay, they are. And then I'm going to need to make sure that they are they have the correct build action. I'm going to use the content copy if newer. Okay, I'm going to make sure that they both are of type content and copy if newer. Content and then copy if newer. Okay. The next thing I'm going to do is delete this background.png. This is the tile icon that's 173 by 173. So you can see if you double click it, it'll open it up in Paint. And that is the one that we saw here displayed. We're going to replace that with the R version of it. The same would be true for the application icon. I'm just going to go ahead and delete that as well. Right click and select Delete. All right, so those two are gone now. I'm going to need to notify our WM map app manifest.xml file. In fact, I'm going to have to make a number of changes here, not the least of which is this application icon will be changed to Zap Notes and then 62x62.png. And then I want to change from background PNG to Zap Notes 173 by 173.png. Okay, great. Then I'm going to change some of the properties of this app element. For example, the title, and this is the title that'll be displayed here So I want to change it to app space notes. The version number is something that we can use for to let the user know, or for us as developers to be able to debug a problem that might happen. Typically, every time you release a new version, if it's a minor change to the application, you would change this. This is the major version, the minor version, and then these are build numbers typically. And so, you know, if I were to make another version and release it out on the marketplace, I might go 1.1, 0.0, or I might include the build number behind it as well. We're not going to touch the genre since we are working with just normal Silverlight applications. If it's a game, you might need to change the genre. The author, I'll go ahead and put my name in here. And the description, create notes that include the geo location where the note was created. And then finally the publisher, I'm just going to put my company, learnvisualstudio.net. All right, the only other thing I'm going to change is down here where we change the tile. I want to change its title as well, and that will change the text that shows up down here. All right, so now what I'm going to need to do, because all this information has been cached, I'm going to need to shut down the emulator, save it, and then I'm going to run it one more time. And apparently it can't find my file. Because I named it wrong. Okay, there we go. I named it phonetically. Okay, so what we're interested in are the icons. Ah, Zap Notes looks awesome. Maybe a little bit on the big size there. Let's go ahead and pin it to the start menu. And then Zap Notes looks good there, although I could bring that down a little bit. So this would probably be the opportunity for me to make some changes to the icons so that they look more like their neighbors, you know, in their various places here. You might be wondering, how do you ensure that the background color is the same as whatever the accent color is chosen by the user? And to my knowledge, there's no way to do that right now. Perhaps in a future version, there'll be some guidelines around how to do that. I just went with the default color that was given to us in the background and the application icon.png files. Okay, so then the last thing that we're going to need to do before we try to submit this to the App Store is to change the build information. So I'm going to select on solution and then change the active configuration from debug to release, and then I'm going to select build solution. And once the build succeeds, then I want to go look for this in the bin directory. So I went to Visual Studio 2010 projects Zap Note bin release, and now these are all the files that I believe I will need for the release version as I upload this to the create.msdn.com site. And that'll be the next thing that we do in the next video. So we'll see you there. Thank you.